Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy sports and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on.
Hello, everyone. Welcome once again. Thursday night, 8 p.m., and you know what time it is. It's the FSP Crew Show. I am your host, JT, a.k.a. The Master, and the host of the FSP Crew Show. And as always, it's a pleasure for me to talk to you and you to listen to me on this fine 8 o'clock p.m. on the Eastern Seaboard on a chilly night, but it's nice and hot and toasty. That's going to be down in Carolina where the New Orleans Saints are hosting. The Carolina Panthers are hosting the New Orleans Saints. Got a great show in store for you tonight. Let's get this thing rolling, and we'll do it like this. Let me talk about some basketball, some football quite naturally because of what's taking place tonight. Even talk about some of the baseball. Congratulations to the San Francisco Giants for pulling out a 3-2 victory in the seventh game of the World Series and winning it away from the Kansas City Royals. Congrats to the Kansas City Royals for taking the San Francisco Giants, who have won, if I'm not mistaken, 3 World Championships in the last 5 or 6 years. That's a heck of a feat. And it's a heck of a thing that Kansas City, who hadn't been into the playoffs for 29 years, was able to get to where they got. You got to give it to them because it was quite naturally, it wasn't easy. And we'll see what happens with them going forward here. But I do like what happened. I think it was pretty substantial. And for those that live in that area, meaning for those who live in the the Midwest, where Kansas City Royals are located, and for those who are on the West Coast and pretty much are probably accustomed to the Giants getting to the playoffs and one and doing what they do best in winning the World Series. And for those who watched it, now to tell you the truth, I didn't watch the World Series. But it was, from what I understand, an enjoyable World Series to watch. So I imagine for baseball, people who watch baseball, who love the game of baseball, this was a pretty fun series to watch from the things I read online and, you know, listen to the radio. This was a fun thing to watch. So I'm thinking that a lot of these players include, let me put it this way, I'll back up. Madison Bumgarner, who pitched the final 5 innings of the World Series to wrap it up for the San Francisco Giants. If he didn't have a name for himself before then, he made a name for himself winning the MVP for one and pitching below a half a point in the ERA. He completely shut the Kansas City Royals down, quite naturally winning the MVP, and made a huge name for himself. So right away, next season, anytime you win the championship, you get a bullseye on your back, on your chest, on your head, on your forehead, wherever any part of your body, and you're on that team, you have a bullseye. Now, Madison Bumgarner had even a bigger bullseye because they expected a lot from him this season, and he delivered during the season, and he was big time, huge, I'm telling you, in the playoffs and into the World Series. Hooch Bochy, the manager, hell of a manager, one of the best managers, low-key, normal guy, plain speaking, and knows how to manage players and to get them to World Series and win three World Series. You got to tip your hat, hats off to him, whatever you want to say. You got to give it to him because the fact is he did what he needed to do and got to put his team, players in position for him to succeed and maximize what they could do, what each and every one of them can do. And what hell of a decision. If I'm not mistaken, Madison Bumgarner came off of 2 days rest. That's old school, man. That's old school. Usually at least 3 days, 4 days, yeah. 3 days, you don't expect even if it's your big horse, to go five innings. 2 days rest, people. 2 days rest. And he shut them down. Shut them down. Eked out a win 3-2. Thank you very much. San Francisco Giants are rejoicing, partying, sigh of relief because they don't have to play another game until next in 2015. Heck of a win. Heck of a win. All I got to say about that. Like I said, I'm going to talk about a little about baseball. Guess what, people? Guess what? For those that didn't know, A-Rod. You heard me talk about A-Rod before. A-Rod. My man A-Rod. Suspension ends. As soon as the World Series is over, his suspension ends. He's eligible to return after his one year suspension has ended. I'm going to read this article from Andrew Marchand from ESPNNewYork.com. Read this article for you. I know I'll comment on it. I don't have my host here, my co-host here, but I'll comment on it. Hopefully they may show up. They may not. It's fine. I understand. It's no problem. Alex Rodriguez's one-year suspension officially ended yesterday, when San Francisco Giants third baseman Pablo Sandoval caught the final out of the 2014 World Series, meaning Rodriguez is off of baseball's restricted list and reinstated to the Yankees' 40-man roster. Rodriguez, quite naturally, people know you. He missed the entire 2014 season after being suspended following Major League Baseball's investigation into the Biogenesis case. Rodriguez has not spoken with the media, and his public appearances have been limited to random football and baseball games. 2 weekends ago, he attended the Dallas Cowboys-New York Giants game at Cowboys Stadium and nearly made some news that quarterback Tony Romo almost ran over him on the way to the field. Rodriguez has no formal plans yet to speak with the media, as the spokesman said. The Yankees and Rodriguez both appear as if they are trying to be conciliatory after the rancor of his suspension. I mean, he's going to get, he got a contract regardless if he played for the Yankees or not. Has 3 years and $61 million remaining on his contract as part of the deal negotiated after the 2007 season. Rodriguez can earn an additional $6 million by hitting just six more home runs and tying Willie Mays for fourth on the all-time list with 660 home runs. So besides his annual salary, which is about $21 million, about $20 million, somewhere around there, he can add an additional $6 million when he hits his sixth home run if and when he plays in 2015. His manager and his general manager have both said they are unsure what to expect from Alex Rodriguez on the field. Rodriguez may have a chance to retain his starting third base spot, but that will rest largely on what the Yankees do this offseason and if Rodriguez is fit enough. Well, Alex Rodriguez has never been one to not be in shape, especially when it comes time to play baseball. And I got to believe that he's going to do his best to show his naysayers, and he's going to have a huge chip on his shoulder when it's time to go to spring training and start the regular baseball season. Huge chip on his shoulder. He played in only 44 games over the past 2 years and had surgery on both of his hips. Joe Girardi has talked with Rodriguez about trying to play first base. I don't know how well that's going to go over, where Rodriguez would serve as a backup and insurance for Mark Teixeira. Rodriguez would also DH if he's on the team. So that means either he plays third base sparingly and plays some first base, and when they feel that he needs a rest from playing one of those two positions, he'll be DH. Despite the bad blood from the lengthy and heated appeals process, the Yankees have given no indications they will release Rodriguez. If they do so, like I said, they would owe him his entire salary. Yankee officials have said that if Rodriguez can still play, they will take him back for 2015. And in my opinion, they don't have a choice. Either they release him and he still gets paid, or they try to get something out of him and pay him with the hope that he can stay healthy for the 2015 season and they can get something worthwhile out of him. And quite naturally, if he hits his sixth home run playing, he gets $6 million on top of his regular salary. Before I go on, let me bring in my esteemed co-host, my man from Jersey. He's a little further up the way from where I am, but he's my fellow Jersey guy, talking about Jeff the Joker. Well, what's up, my man?
Hey, Jerry, how's it going?
All right. I know you've been listening on for about a minute or so, and you heard me talking about Mr. Alex Rodriguez, who's got reinstated as soon as the last out was recorded in the World Series. What's your thoughts? This Alex Rodriguez is due to play or due to participate, let me put it that way, and collect over the next three seasons, whether he plays for the Yankees or not, over $60 million. Talk to me.
Yeah, that's some racket. You know, you think there would be some kind of language in the contract that the Yankees could have got out of it. And the thing is, the Yankees could try to aggravate him, but they're obligated. And if they offer him a buyout, he doesn't have to accept it because, you know, other teams might. There's only probably a few teams who would be interested in him, maybe. So the Yankees are stuck, and it's unique, but they were crazy to sign into that contract. But, you know, seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see. You know, I didn't defend Alex Rodriguez. I defended how he was being treated. But I'm interested to see how he's received with the management of the Yankees. And while you have a pretty good idea of how well he's going to get received if he steps on to the field in a Major League Baseball game, even if it's an exhibition, he's going to get rode pretty hard, I can imagine. The last of the guys who've gotten penalized for the Biogenesis debacle. But he seems a guy over the years, even when he was in Seattle, even when he went with to Texas, and then when he came to the Yankees, he seems like the guy that can wash all that away, or not wash it away, but put that aside, have blinders and earmuffs on, and blinders on his eyes, and not see and hear what's taking place for the most part, and be able to perform over the years. But who knows? He's, what, 40 years old with two hip surgeries and a year out of baseball. You have to wonder, quite naturally, how much he has left, especially if he still wants to play third base versus what the Yankees have in mind for him, which is playing first base also at times DH. I have to wait and see what happens. I don't know if you have any comment on that. If you do, just go ahead. Just jump in here and let me know.
I'll tell you, Alex Rodriguez, he's a different kind of guy. And if you want to compare him to somebody who's been in a somewhat similar situation, Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds did not care if millions of people hated him. Alex Rodriguez does care if people hate him. But the thing is, if the Yankees, if they try to, try to mess with him, whatever, you know, he's not a complete dummy. I'm sure he'll go to the union or somebody if that happens. And you know, the players' union, or it's really an association, it's not quite a union, they stand by guys like Rodriguez, you know. So, and I'm sure he's gonna fall back on them if necessary.
Yeah. All right. I wanted to talk about this because it doesn't involve any team of mine, but this really, and I don't know why, but it bothered me. The guy who engineered all the players and got was a hell of a general manager or president of baseball operations or whatever he was with the and I forget his name off the top of my head. The guy who was in charge of the Tampa Bay Rays, I'm not talking about the manager, I'll talk about that in a minute, was hired with a huge contract and pulled away from the Tampa Bay Rays to the Los Angeles Dodgers to work his magic over there, because he's considered one of the better general managers or presidents of the organization, whatever his title is. In baseball, young guy, and he went to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Speculation was that Joe Madden would follow him because they were like a pair. They came together and they worked well together. That speculation was quickly stumped or taken away, or whatever way you want to say it, that Joe Madden was going to go take Don Mattingly's job because he opted out of his contract and left the Tampa Bay Rays. Now, like I said, when he did that, a lot of people thought that he was going to push Don Mattingly out, but it turns out that he went to another high-profile and young GM, and he must like, I wouldn't say small markets, but he must like to rebuild organizations or help rebuild organizations, because he went from the Tampa Bay Rays, who were irrelevant for a while until he came there, to now the Chicago Cubs, with, I think it's the guy who's in charge, Steve Epstein, who came from the Boston Red Sox, to help build that young team, because they got a lot of young talent, and now he's going to help mold that team. Now, my problem is this. Now, he's entitled to go where he wants, but speculation was, and I think a lot of people thought that once he left Tampa Bay, he was going to take a year off. He was going to go and just relax, take it easy, do whatever, and not worry about managing a team. Well, all of a sudden, this pops up, and it had to be undercover, or it had to be whatever. Now he's going to the Chicago Cubs. That bothers me because I think he, like I said, he's entitled to do whatever he wants because he's earned that right. But it seems like there was something, and I'm coming along with you, with the conspiracy theory type of thing here, that he had every intention of leaving the Tampa Bay, realizing that he didn't have the guy in upper management that would be able to get him and find him valuable talent, that he would go to the next guy that didn't have a manager but had the same type of general manager that can find good talent in the Chicago Cubs. What's your thoughts on him going from Tampa Bay to Chicago? Is that a smart move, underhanded move, dumb move in your opinion? What's your thoughts?
Oh, are you kidding? I mean, this is news to me because I was just on the road. I was in class for a couple hours. But, I mean, Tampa is not a very good baseball market, and Chicago is. And, you know, it's not just the athletes who got egos. The coaches and executives got egos, too. And mm-hmm. believe me, there's guys, you know, sharp young guys who they'll they'll take, you know, an undesirable job like Tampa to kind of, you know, make their bones and then parlay that into something bigger and better. Like an example in football, John Gruden salvaged the Raiders and then, boom, was able to, you know, turn it into a lot of money he made with the Buccaneers. Because, guys are practically killing themselves to become NFL coaches, except for the Raiders, because a lot of guys don't want to work there. But Gruden was willing to do it. He won there, which is very difficult, and boom, he parlayed that into bigger and better things.
Well, I just thought it was pretty – I could be wrong. I thought it was a little underhanded, but it is what it is. It's the nature of the business. The guys go where it's free country, go where he wants to go, but everybody thought he was entrenched. He loved that area. He loved the players and the organization. And then he just, because, well, quite nasty, he probably would have stayed there if his general manager, his boss, had stayed there. But I guess he saw the handwriting on the wall. He didn't have that buffer that he had when his boss was there. So he wanted to go to somebody that he felt could be equivalent to what he had before, so he left. We'll see what happens. We'll see. And he's a good manager. He's got a lot of young talent in the Chicago Cubs. Pitching, I think they need to they shore up their pitching. I think they got pretty decent offense. Their pitching has been for the most part holding them back. So we'll see what happens. All right. I want to also talk about and I just had it with me. Just had it with me. What's your thoughts, Jeff? I'm going to just briefly here because I already talked about it, but I want your thoughts on, and I don't know if you watched any of it. Kansas City Royals taking the Giants to the seventh game, and the seventh game being a, I wouldn't say a domination because it was only a 3-2 game, but when Madison Bumgarner pitches the last five innings and shuts the Royals down, I guess, and wins the MVP, and on 2 days rest, which is unprecedented in my opinion, that a pitcher would jump in there on 2 days rest and be able to pitch five innings, scoreless innings, and seal the seventh game to win the World Series. What's your thoughts?
You know, I caught some of that game. I don't watch a lot of baseball. I watched baseball as a kid, and You know, it's funny because in baseball the rules haven't changed a lot, but the way they play the game has changed a lot. And, you know, they were making a big deal, and I have to admit it rightfully so, about Baumgartner throwing a lot of innings during the regular season and then throwing a lot of innings in the postseason. And I give the announcers credit. They didn't get carried away because I've seen games, you know, a similar situation – And the commentators want to rush the pitcher to ICU after the game. You know what I'm saying? They get a little carried away. But the fact
right.
is, he's a big boy. He's a pro athlete. And, you know, it's the seventh game of the World Series. He's got the whole winter to rest, you know? You know, and that's one of the big things that's changed in the game is that pitchers are handled a lot differently now, and the pitching is more specialized. And the thing I don't like about it is because of the way the pitchers are treated now, teams don't carry as many hitters on the roster, so there's fewer pinch hitters, there's fewer pinch runners, there's fewer defensive substitution. It's all about just, you know, having as many relief pitchers as you can. And yeah, it was interesting. And, you know, I mean, Game 7 in the World Series, it doesn't get much bigger than that.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the world of NFL. And before I do that, let me bring in another caller in here. I know who this guy is. Let me bring another caller in and welcome him to the show. Caller from the 240, Mr. C.B. McCown. What's up, my man?
What's up, Jerry? What's up, Jeff? What's going on, man?
Hey, McCown, what's going on?
Not much, man.
All right.
Not much.
Well, I want to talk about this because I don't know if you guys noticed. I mean, it's news, but it's not real big news. Aaron Hernandez. You heard that name before.
Yeah.
The ex New England Patriots player has a Massachusetts judge rejected a request from him and his representation to move his trial to a different county. In court today, his lawyer urged the judge to move the trial out of Bristol County, citing what he calls sensational and inflammatory media coverage, he said, has prejudiced potential jurors against Hernandez. He said the press coverage of Hernandez has been relentless and have often included references to other crimes, including separate charges against Hernandez in Suffolk County of killing in 2012, of killing two guys in Boston. His quote says, "This has poisoned the jury pool in Bristol County." He cited two telephone polls commissioned by the defense in which more than half the respondents said they believe Hernandez is definitely or probably guilty in Lloyd's killing. That's the semi-pro player, Odin Lloyd, who got killed in last year. Quite naturally, Hernandez is accused of doing that. Prosecutors challenged the methodology reliability of the poll. The judge said Hernandez not shown that the Bristol County community's prejudgment of the case is so substantial that picking impartial jurors would be impossible. The judge, she denied the motion to change venue, finding that Hernandez's lawyers had not shown that the Bristol County's community prejudgment of the case is so substantial that picking impartial jurors would be impossible. Hernandez's trial in Lloyd's killing is scheduled to begin right after the first of the year, which is June 9th. And the judge said she plans to summon more than 1,000 people to pick a jury. And quite naturally, Hernandez is also charged in Suffolk County of killing two men in 2012. Now, January 9th, he's going to be on trial, and is this going to be something like OJ, or what the hell is going to happen here? You know it's going to be sensationalized. For one, you know, you go. It's probably you're going to get in camera or in courtroom cameras if they allow it. and try to get an analysis, a blow-by-blow analysis from every major news station in the country. What's your thoughts on this? Well, I'll go to Macau first. Are Hernandez going to have to stay in the same county that he's accused in versus a change of venue? Talk to me, Macau.
I really be wondering what world some of these judges live in, man. I mean, it's like too much evidence everywhere that everybody poisoned to this joint. I mean, I could see how she, you know, she said it the way she said it, you know, that they didn't prove the prejudgment, but there's an abundance of proof. But I think she could have responded better by just saying, you know, it wouldn't matter what county you go to, Slim, because everybody know about this, and everybody think you guilty. You know what I mean? But she can't say it like that. She can't say it like that. So I don't know, man. I don't know.
Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, this Hernandez thing has been practically like a soap opera. I heard he ran out of money. I mean, how's he going to pay his lawyer?
Hey, what can I tell you, Jeff? You want to contribute to his defense fund?
I don't think so.
Hey, who knows? I mean, somebody's got to find ways to get the money to get the right representation. Yeah. Probably dead broke, but. Witnesses they call and how long this trial will go out. Excuse me. Will depend on when we find out if he's guilty or not. And I'm more than likely, and I hate to say it like this, but I always believe in the process of you're innocent until proven guilty. So, but like Macau said, family evidence, and I don't know if there's a jury in the whole country because of all the information ever since this came out, if he'd be able to get an impartial jury to render impartially. Anyway, let's move on to some other interesting and police blotter NFL news. Oh, boy. Unbelievable. Domestic violence. This is about domestic violence, guys. Greg Hardy, the right hand of the Carolina Panthers. I don't know if you guys read this or not, but it's been reported that his trial. Remember, it's unclear if or how this will affect Hardy's indefinite suspension, though the NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reports it means Hardy won't play this season. That's what I'm thinking. The show argued that he should be allowed to suit up as his legal situation plays out. Well, if that's the case, if he's allowed to play, then you know the people who represent Adrian Peterson is going to scream and stomp up and down and cry about, well, if he's going to come back, meaning Greg Hardy, why can't we come back until after our legal situation plays out? The Panthers' defense has quite naturally missed Hardy's dominating presence because the Panthers are not the same defense as they were last year. I'm going to go to Jeff this time. Get your thoughts. Greg Hardy. They won't let him play, just like Adrian Peterson, until his legal process plays out. What's your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, I think the difference with Hardy is he actually was convicted. He's appealing it. So, you know, it's a slightly different situation. But the thing is, you know, I'm for due process. But, you know, some people say, oh, well, I'm for due process, so you know, Adrian Peterson should be able to play. But to a lot of people, you wait for your due process in the county joint, you know, if the bail is high or whatever. So But, you know, this is, you know, not everything is simple. Not everything is cut and dry. And, you know, and these are serious accusations. I guess, you know, some jobs, if you're accused of something, they'll give you the paid suspension. So this way they won't get in trouble for having you on the job, and the employee won't sue them for not paying them. And, you know, it happens occasionally because, let's say, you know, if a teacher or a cop is accused of something bad, they don't want them still on the job. So the compromise is the paid suspension. You know, I don't think NFL teams are going to do that, but, you know, it happens sometimes.
Okay. McCown, what's your thoughts?
Just a lack of leadership, man. Keep going back to the same old drum I keep beating. You know, Goodell is just not a good leader, man. I mean, if you have a situation and it's a, you know, a new situation, or, you know, something arises and you have a policy and your policy's outdated, you update the policy and you stick to your guns. That's it. You know what I mean? It's just that simple. I mean, it's all this, because I'm going to tell you, 5 years ago, Hardy would still be playing right now. He would really still be playing. He would absolutely still be playing. And just the landscape now is just ridiculous now, man. So if they was going to go the route where, you know, they're going to cover their ass, update the policy, say you cannot play while you've been convicted, while you're going through the appeals process, all that stuff. You need to put that stuff in writing. This is what leadership is about, man. You need to put that stuff in writing and put it in place. You know what I'm saying? You can't just be playing in limbo like this, got so much conversation going back and forth and all this nonsense, man. It's just a lack of leadership, total lack of leadership. And honestly, I really don't see the problem in having him play. I really don't see the problem in that. I really don't. Because due process, the legal system, is there for a reason. You know what I mean? It's there for a reason. And if he's out and he can play, he should play.
Well, if that's the case, then what do you think about AP and Ray Rice?
Adrian Peterson should be playing. Ray Rice should have never been suspended again from the NFL. They should have just let the Ravens cut him, you know what I'm saying, and just blackballed him. You know what I'm saying? It's like they don't even know how to even play their own game, man. It's just nonsense. There's no leadership. It's absence of leadership. That'd have been too easy for me. I would have just left them alone. That'd have been too easy for me. Let the Ravens go ahead, cut them, and just blackball them, and don't say nothing. Don't say nothing, and put up another policy and be like, you know, you can't be doing this type of stuff. You know what I mean? It's just too simple to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm just Maybe I'm just simple minded. But AP should be playing. I don't see why he shouldn't be playing. He hasn't even been to court yet. That's just crazy.
Okay. Speaking of playing, and this is a great segue because McCall had talked about he should be playing. Well, your boy, with all the Colt McCoy and Kirk Cousins and some playing bad and some playing well and pulling out a win, speaking of Thursday, your boy, your head coach, McCall, Coach Jay Gruden, confirmed Robert Griffin III, who had a pretty bad ankle injury, will be the Redskins' Week 9 starter, barring setbacks. He believes his quarterback is 100% physically, getting in full practice on Thursday, took majority of first-team reps over Colt McCoy after splitting them on Wednesday. Griffin, quite naturally, in my opinion, and probably Jeff's and everybody else's, is a monster upgrade over McCoy and Kirk Cousins, and he was sidelined since week two, and a questionable fit for the offense Gruden insists on running. Well, if he was a questionable fit leading up to week two before he got hurt, how is he a better fit? And everybody, and I know McCall is so hyped up, and probably quite naturally, because Kirk Cousins didn't really pan out, and Colt McCoy is not a long-term solution, that Robert Griffin III is coming back and it's going to be a better fit for the Gruden office when he was struggling in the first 2 weeks of it. Talk to me, McCall. You're the Redskins fan here. Give me some insight.
Man, I gave you insight, man. I told y'all Kirk Cousins was not it. I was never one of these delusional Redskins fans. It's not even close between Cousins and Griffin. It's hilarity to even have that conversation. But there's a lot of undertones going on there. If you can peep out what I'm saying, but Colt McCoy, I thought he played a hell of a game against the Cowboys and stuff like that. But if Griffin is ready and they're not rushing him, and from what I saw, he was ready last week. For real, he was ready last week. He looked really good last week. So I don't think they're rushing him. I think, you know, if he's ready, he need to get in there and play, because they got too much riding on this kid. And this kid is a proven commodity. He's proven commodity. You know what I mean? Since he came in, the team went to the playoffs. You know, he suffered a rash of injuries and stuff like that. You know, he had to get through it. He tried to get through it last year. He fell out of favor with Shanahan and all that madness that was going on. All that stuff is gone and beyond. Don't pay attention to these delusional Redskin fans and the media down here is so idiotic. It's just crazy how idiotic they are. And as to think that there's some type of real competition between McCoy and Griffin. And really, it was laughable to even think that there was a competition between Cousins and Griffin. You know, the best thing Griffin did was just get quiet. That was the best thing he did. I was so happy. I was like, good. He wasn't tweeting that much. Nobody can say anything. Nobody can say nothing about Griffin. Absolutely nothing. You know what I mean? He was ready. And like I said, in my opinion, he was ready last week. He could have ran last week. But to address the part where you say he was struggling, yeah, he was struggling. So, you know, it's pretty much a new offense. And he has to, you know, kind of like sit more in the pocket, read more, and it's a different rhythm for him. But if you take a look at the Jacksonville game, he was getting it. You know, he was playing the way the way they envisioned him to play until he had that freak injury or whatever. But they need to go ahead and put him in, man. I mean, you know, it would probably be the most caution, the most conservative move to, you know, let him play against Tampa Bay, after this week and after the bye, you get two more weeks. But for what? If he's ready, you know what I mean, and he's been ready and he's looking good, put him out there. Because, like I said, they got too much riding on him. They got way too much riding on him, and for good reason. For very good reason.
Okay. Jeff, your thoughts?
You know, Griffin might be more ready week 9 than week 2 because, you know, he seems pretty serious. And, I mean, I'm sure he's been going to the meetings and he's been doing some practice. So he might know the offense a little better. The situation with Cousins is, the old cliche that, the backup quarterback's the most popular guy in the team. And, you know, everybody wants to see the backup, and then after they see the backup for a while, then they know why the guy was the backup.
Right.
I mean, you know,
you
McCoy
just totally summed
solid.
Up
I mean,
DC, period. You totally summed us up.
But it's happened all over. And you know, regarding McCoy, he played well. He's an NFL quarterback. I don't think he's a starting NFL quarterback, but he's a decent backup, and I think by that good showing,
he'll stick around the league for a while because people see that. And, you know, that's, you know, they know from the second, third string guy, you're not going to get a great performance, but you want a guy who with limited practice reps and whatever could come in and run the offense and move the ball. So, you know, he'll stick around for a while.
Oh, one more thing I wanted to add. You know, there was a little uprising with the wide receivers, man. Because Colt wasn't getting them the ball the way they should. And if you watch the game, a lot of those deep passes to DeSean Jackson, Jones was short. He got them there to him, but they were short. They were hella short. And my man Pierre, he wasn't getting the catch. He was hot. And, you know, with Griffin coming back, Garçon is Robert Griffin's safety valve. He's going to look for him. He's going to put the ball to him all the time. What I really want to see is that timing between Griffin and DeSean, because that has the potential to be lethal. You know, but if it doesn't go well, it's going to get ugly real quick. But I don't foresee that happening too much.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on from the gridiron onto the hardwood. Now, I just caught partial wind of this because the NBA season just started a couple of nights ago, I think. And what I'm referring to is that the first game, I think, that the Lakers played was with against Dwight Howard. And Dwight Howard, from what I understand, at one point went up against or got into a slight confrontation with his former teammate and I thought best buddy, and I'm saying that sarcastically, that to an altercation on court. And from what I understand is, and I'm reading this headline here, that it questions whether Kobe Bryant called Dwight a bitch ass and the N-word because of a show of elbow to the face of Kobe Bryant. Now, I didn't watch the game. I'm thinking Mikal, because he's a Laker fan, man, watched the game.
You
so,
know I was watching that game, Slow.
So,
you know, I was hoping Kobe would throw one at that bitch. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I'm thinking, I'm gonna no offense to you, Jeff. I know I went to him first last time, but I'm gonna go to Mikal again because I was pretty sure this is the first game of the season for the Lakers, and he wanted to see where they were at. Unfortunately, their rookie, I think it's Julius Randle or John Randle, whatever his name is, broke his leg.
Julius Randle. He broke his leg.
But the real story, in my opinion, is the conference. And whatever words were between Dwight Howard and Kobe Bryant. Talk to me, Mikal.
I don't know about the band joint. I don't know about that one. But I did see Kobe call him Saul. I saw Kobe say that numerous times. So, I mean, in the heat of the moment, I could believe it. But Kobe don't really talk like that, but you know, I don't know Kobe like that. You know what I'm saying? It's probable. I'm gonna put it at probably about a 85 percentile. I didn't see his lips on that play, but Kobe wasn't gonna back down at all. And that was Jai, like, I mean, the way he did it, he kinda like, you know, he was looking right at Kobe and threw the elbow at him. You know, really all he had to do was pull the ball up. You know, Kobe couldn't get up there. That's all he had to do was put the ball up. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But he decided to throw the elbow right at Kobe, right at him, as if, you know, Kobe was going to back down from him. Everybody know how soft this dude is. That dude's soft as pudding. You know what I mean? And I don't know, but it was good to see Kobe out there, and it was good to see the fight in him or whatever, but, you know, Lakers ain't going to do too much. They ain't doing nothing this year. They ain't doing nothing at all. Randall hurt. Nah. And Boozer's cool, but that ain't enough. And I never was a Jeremy Lin fan. You can speak to my cousin about him.
Okay. Jeff, what's your thoughts? I know this is pretty wild, but what's your thoughts on Dwight Howard?
He's
a big baby.
You know, it's the little NBA soap opera. I'm trying to think. I can't remember the last time a big-name player like Dwight just did not fit in with a team like his tenure with the Lakers. Dwight's a very good player. He's not a champion, but he's an excellent player. He's not a bum. You know, he's not like Benoit Benjamin or somebody like that. But, he's a pain in the butt, but Kobe's a champion. This guy wants to win championships. He wants to win everything. He wants to beat his grandma's behind if he's playing her in gin rummy. And Dwight isn't that kind of guy. I'm not saying he's a bad guy, but he's not a champion type player. I don't usually start paying attention to the NBA until football season's over. He only has so much time, you know. But,
right.
You know, the Knicks now, you know, they got a new look, new head coach, new president, you know, now with the triangle offense and whatever. And, I know he's not the greatest, but Jeremy Lin had his moments in New York. Send him back to New York, you know. I'm sure, you know, everybody will love to have him back. I'm glad basketball's back because my mom is a big LeBron fan, and I think she's going to start rooting for the Cavs now that he's back in Cleveland.
Yeah, and speaking of LeBron, they're in the second quarter, and Cleveland's up by 5 over New York, and the Knicks are playing in Cleveland. They got lambasted last night against the Chicago Bulls, who look like they're legit because of the way they mistreated and abused the Knicks. And I heard a comment, and I'm not too sure, and I'm trying to just wade through exactly how to say this, that Derek Fisher said to the media that it's going to take a while to get this offense, and we're not going to be good for a while or something.
Hello?
Jerry's fading out.
Yeah.
I'm fading out?
Yeah, you faded out.
Am I here?
Yeah.
You hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. You went out when you after you said Derek Fisher's comment.
Okay. I've seen that Derek Fisher said that we're not going to be too good for a while because of the offense, and it took some of the media by surprise that he would be so candid and said that his team is not that good. What's your thoughts on it, Jeff?
You know, I don't know. It doesn't sound like the kind of thing a head coach would usually say, but I guess he's still learning how to be a head coach. But I don't know what to say about that. Because you usually, you know, when they talk to players or coaches, it could get very boring because the interviewers are constantly trying to bait them, and they give these cliche answers. You don't usually get stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, and before I go to Macau, this other comment I got is that Phil Jackson said to reporters that his team is not ready for showtime. And he can't say how long it's going to take before they're ready. Wow, that's from the president of the Knicks, Phil Jackson. And that's only the first game coming out of the shoot. What's your thoughts on that, Mikal? Jesus.
I mean, I think they're just being honest. You know, I mean, you've got Carmelo, and then you've got everybody else, and you're running a triangle. It was good to see Stoudemire out there. I'm interested to see how he looks playing in the triangle. I mean, I watched the first quarter of the game. They didn't look too bad. You know, they didn't look great, but you could see the elements of the triangle there. And I think they're going to have to tinker around with Carmelo. I mean, because they keep falling back to that isolation and watching Carmelo type stuff. If they could get out of that and really get probably another solid player, I'm thinking Stoudemire could be that guy, but they need, you know, somebody at the top of that triangle, you know what I'm saying, moving it. So, I think they're just being brutally honest right now. I mean, I'm not really surprised at that. Both of those gentlemen are very, very candid and very, very, you know, upfront about, you know, anything, you know. I really like Phil Jackson, and I really think that this is going to work out. They just need the players. They need the players to go with Carmelo. You know, that's just it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. We got about 3 minutes left in the show. I'm going to go to Jeff.
I think Jerry faded out.
Yeah, he faded out again.
I want to wish everybody a happy Halloween. That's tomorrow. And tonight is what in New Jersey we call Goosey Night, also known as Mischief Night, Devil's Night, Cabbage Night, and so on. And I didn't realize until I was an adult that Goosey Night doesn't take place all over the country. It only takes place in certain areas. Hopefully nothing bad happens tonight. I mean, some people get a little carried away. So, everybody be cool.
Can you guys hear me? No?
We just did. We lost you for a couple minutes.
Okay. Yeah, we lost
you
for a second. Yeah, we can hear you now.
All right. How about you, Mikal? What you got to say before we get out of here?
I want to say to all the beautiful people down there in Dallas, Texas, I want to say happy Halloween. And how about them Redskins? Woo, baby. Peace and blessings.
Really love that one. all right, people. Tune in next week, same time, same place, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where Jeff and I and maybe Mikal or whoever pops in and we'll talk about news of the past week. Also, come and stop by. Same station, same website on Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where the FSP show will be in effect. I'll be co-hosting with Vic, who will be the host. And we transition that into Sunday, which will be the master plan, where I host that show. And we all talk about fantasy football, every last game, almost every player that we possibly put in that 1.5-2 hours. Lance Goodman, who is my esteemed co-host. And then on Monday, it would be Extra Point with Lance Goodman, and he goes over the results from Sunday and previews fantasy football for Sunday football game at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. With that being said, the games, enjoy your weekend, happy Halloween, and be safe. Wow.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics.